Good afternoon. In today's TAG Talks, I, Lisa Lupo, will be chatting with two members of our TAG Canada team, Director of Food Safety, Sam Davidson, and Senior Advisor, Ranjit Klar. We're talking today about food defense in Canadian facilities and why it's essential to go a step beyond the basic plan to ensure you have a full threat assessment program. Good afternoon, Sam and Ranjit.
Hey, Lisa.
So you're Canadian residents yourself, so you've worked with and been in many of the food manufacturing facilities across the country, and you've seen a wide range of food defense plans as well as facilities without any plans. So that kind of brings us to our first question here. Since Canada does not have any specific food defense regulations, why does a facility need to have a food defense plan? Ranjit, what would you think on that one?
Yeah, so thank you, Lisa, for this question. What I will give my points in this as, first of all, food defense program is the right thing to do for the safety of the business product, and it affects the food safety and people's safety if we don't have a program in place. Second one is that since we share with Canada and US share business partnership in food supply chain, so we have in FSMA, FDA has the requirements, like intentional adulteration rule came up, and the food defense is very heavily taken as a, considered as a requirement. So it's important for Canadian food supply chain to do that, to make sure we are on the same page in terms of managing the threats related to food defense.
Sam, would you have anything to add to that?
No, that's a pretty good answer from Ranjit there. I would say that there are plenty of locations that I've been to with good and not so good plants. And I think one of the things that people have to remember is that no matter what they do, there's always something that can be improved upon. I've seen facilities where they believe that they're doing okay because they've got cameras and they've got all the right things in place. But, you know, some of the things you've got to remember are that, you know, how long do you keep the recordings for your, you know, when you've got cameras there? I know a facility that had an issue and they didn't store the recordings over 30 days and the incident happened about 2 months before it. So, you know, things like that, or even make sure that you got cameras in the right place. I discussed with a facility that I was visiting about the threat of intentional adulteration. And they said, oh, we've got a camera there. But when we looked at the camera, you couldn't actually see the hatch to the mixing tank where that would be. Okay. So there's definitely things like that. And there's always room for improvement, I think, no matter if it's that or in food safety. Yeah.
Okay. And I want to add here, since Sam mentioned cameras, yes, good to know that security cameras are there, but how many times, when, and how often somebody's actually checking that all their 45 cameras are working or not. Mm-hmm. So working on some of the facilities found that they have cameras, but not some of the cameras went off a few months back. Nobody knew that. So these are the top small things, but very, very significant in addition to having cameras, but also making sure they're working.
Talking about that, I was at a facility and that they had giant TV screens in various places around their location with the live feeds. So even in the lunchroom, you could see all the cameras and you could see what was going on. So I guess it was a good way of, one, making sure that everything's working and people can see it. And two, a preventative measure, because then employees would realize, or anyone that came to the facility would realize, that they're constantly on and people can see them, that anyone can see them. So yeah, it's cameras are a good thing if they're used properly.
Yeah,
okay. So besides, you know, cameras and maybe either not working or not being positioned properly or such, what are some of the other things that food defense assessments are finding are lacking in facilities that have plans, but, you know, maybe not quite as complete as they should be?
I guess I can answer this question and Sam can add. So food defense programs should be specific to site. That's the key. Rule of thumb is, like, if the site can have a food defense plan, it has to actually designed for the site. And it's only possible if they are knowledgeable, qualified individuals design the program, and the food defense team, how knowledgeable they are to assess, do the risk assessment, vulnerability assessments, and make sure they are enabled to find those threats, the risks in relation to food defense. Only then you can see a robust program, which not only is the right program to be in place, but also will help to reduce the risk.
Yeah, you see it plenty of times where, as you said, Ranjit, it has to be site specific. What you'll have is maybe a corporate entity that brings up a food defense policy.
Mm-hmm.
But it's important that the site is specific because of so many things that a facility will use, or areas or sites that are different. You know, your surrounding environment can be different, or more accessible or less accessible. And the training is an important part as well, because, you know, I have seen plans where they've got a plan, and that's great, but really all they're doing is checking to make sure the doors are secure. You know, and that's all that they really see. But then you also see plans that are really, really well developed and involved. But that can also take a lot of time. And, you know, you need to have someone that's really knowledgeable about it, as Ranjit said. When you think about some of the plans that are in place or that are around at the minute, and I think one at the minute of Carver and Shock, which mm-hmm. is a pretty popular one, but it's very complicated. And it takes a lot of time. So to have that person perform it properly, it's a big deal. So it's I guess you got to get the right balance. That's where things can become a little bit difficult, where maybe people are overwhelmed maybe by something like Carver and Shock, and then what else can they do, and what other measures can they take, and then is it enough? You know, so when they say, yeah, we've got a food defense plan and we do this and we do that, but is it really enough? And I think one of the things that that we really need to look at, that people don't even realize as much, is that it's generally the biggest threat comes from internally. So yeah. Locking doors is all very well, you know, or keeping an eye out for strangers is all very good, but these people tend not to know where they can have the greatest impact. It's the internal employee who know how to do the much damage with the least amount of effort. So someone that's knowledgeable of the process is I guess the greatest threat. So that's one of the other things that I think, and maybe us as Canadians, we're so nice, right? We don't think that way. We don't think that people can be a threat, but that's one of the issues. Yeah,
I really like this comment, Sam, because we trust so much and we are nice people. This is Canadian. But I to just reiterate, add a little bit on this, the points, like, okay, a food defense program for a plant. A production facility, the areas to consider can be starting from outside areas, your fence, as Sam rightly mentioned, then inside areas, employees' entrance, access points, how many exit doors you have, those doors are armed or not armed, who can leave and enter the behind the back of the plant without anybody knowing, processing areas where people are actually mixing ingredients, then receiving areas, storage areas, and security of the bulk storage, like the silos. People have silos for flour, for sugar, for oils, and is it locked all the time? Is it somebody, is there any risk of any adulteration risk, or somebody can tamper those storage areas? Water security, chemical security, personal security. So food defense is having lots of points in there. And really the emphasis is on that you have to be able, the facility has to be able to reduce the vulnerability at highly vulnerable points. And that can be identified by a knowledgeable, trained food defense team.
Okay. So if I'm a food facility and trying to develop or improve my food defense plan, could I just kind of follow the GFSI standards or use FDA templates? Will that give me a good enough solution? Maybe Sam, what were your thoughts on that?
It's always a good start, yeah. You know, FSMA has this rule in place now and for good reason. So there is training with FSMA around intentional adulteration and vulnerability assessments. And I believe our colleague Christopher Snabes is going to talk about that a little bit further in another video. And so that they do show that they do. I talked about Carver and Chuck and Carver earlier on, and although it's complicated, what FSMA have come out with is a sort of like a hybrid method, which makes it a lot easier. And I would say really what you want to be doing is going further than what GFSI requires. People are doing it, and it's good that GFSI requires it, because it's people want to have a GFSI certification. But it's almost minimal, you know, basic requirements. At least you should have this. Whereas really when we're talking about these sort of things, we need to have more than that. So there are plans and there are processes in place, and it is possible. There's better ones and there's not so good ones, right? But I think the way industry is moving, and the need to have GFSI certifications now is helping to drive it.
Yep.
Anything you would add to that, Ranjit?
Yeah, I think he captured all the most most important, all the points I can see. Just to reiterate exactly in a different way, like, is food defense program requires actionable processing steps with the mitigation strategies, which should be risk-based. The goal of the food defense should be to look for possible insider attackers outside supply chain and all the possible steps. And it has to be like GFSI is a good start to required. It's a requirement from GFSI. It's a good start. FDA tools are a good start. But again, back to original point, like, it has to be site specific. The risks are different for every plant. We are working with a different employee landscape. Like, people are coming from agencies. People are coming full time. There is a huge shortage of labor going on right now in Canada industry, and these all are impacting somewhat that different people are coming to the plant for production, and those are the frontline workers, like how much they are able to contribute in the positive side of the food defense. So these are the few things which we need to consider as a site-specific program.
Okay.
You have to realize as well that if you want to export your product to the US, you know, there is that potential that you will have an FDA audit. And you know, they're going to be following FSMA rules. So if you don't have a plan that lines up with FSMA, you're not going to be able to export to a facility, and you won't be able to export into the US if they don't see it as a strong enough standard or a strong enough program. It doesn't have to be exactly FSMA, but it has to match FSMA requirements.
So I need to develop a nice, robust food defense plan. So are there any low or no cost things that I can do to get started or improve my program?
Definitely. There, you know, there's some simple things that you can do. One of the first things I thought of is using a good buddy system, where you would have, in a sensitive area, you would make sure there's more than one person. So what Ranjit talked about earlier on there was, you know, mixing areas and silo areas where, you know, if there's someone working at that, make sure they're not doing it on their own and have someone there working with them. Or ensuring that, and again, talk with Ranjit talking about employees and the amount of temporary employees that are going on. You know, I was at one facility and I think 75% are temporary or agency employees. So again, in these sensitive areas, make sure that it's maybe a long-term permanent employee that works in that area. Someone that is trustworthy, I think. I'm not even sure if that's the right phrase, but you know what I'm saying. Someone that is dependable, reliable, and you have a good history with the company. Things like that. Just even things of, keeping that engagement with employees, making sure there's training. You know, it's pretty simple to put up posters once a month or something in an employee area just to remind them to, you know, keep an eye on the doors, or remember if you see anything going on to notify a supervisor. You know, those sort of things that it's not the same expense, or it's no expense compared to installing cameras or advanced security systems, but it's a start.
Right. Ranjit, anything else you can think of for that?
Yeah, I think a few points like frontline workers, like the floor staff, floor production people, as Sam mentioned about mixing area, like that's the most vulnerable area where things go wrong, can affect a long supply chain and across, until the end and longer. So how can we have highly vulnerable points are assessed in the food defense, and the low cost little initiatives should be the education awareness to frontline production staff. And it should be a part of the proper refresher training, the right training, not the training like one slide with the food defense, there is a program in place. What this mixer or a shipper or receiver need to know about his role when a shipper or receiver receiving a driver, is he allowing the driver to come inside the plant or he has to stay behind the cage? So really there is so many things that small without investing anything can be done to actually set up the base of the food defense. Those frontline workers, I use the word frontline workers because if they screw up there, we are in the consumer will be impacted due to unsafe product. So they should be trained for any unusual suspicious activities around their working area where they can lead into a threat, a risk of to the product and the facility. So part of the pre-op, somebody should be checking around the area. Is there any suspicious things that he's noticing or she's noticing which is different than yesterday? And so these are the few things which doesn't need any infrastructure or anything. It's really the awareness. And TAG, we are pretty excited about our training program we have about those, like how to train the right people for the right awareness so that it can affect the positive side towards the business benefits, like the safety side of it. So I believe being visiting so many places, it's really that awareness that can be raised by a good trained food defense team leader of the facility.
And you can always reach out to us.
Yes.
and so what do you as members of TAG Canada and working with our clients, what are the things you help them with?
What I've done is especially around that awareness thing, you know, and I've done sort of like a mini threat assessment with some facilities. You know, one example, I talked about that facility with the hatch that wasn't viewable by from the cameras. But I was there for 2 days, and those 2 days, that hatch was constantly open. Mm-hmm. It was near an exit, and it wasn't very well lit. So it could have been really easy for someone just to do some of that over those 2 days. And I said, this is mixing an ingredient that's going into a single serve product. So you're talking probably about 10,000 liters of something in there, which is only part of the finished product. So, you know, there's more than 10,000 single serve items that could be consumed. So then you gotta, I think really is to get that realization, sort of what's the impact. You have a large tank here, as this place was doing with single serve items. So there's at least 10,000 people, you know, and if it was half of the ingredient or half of the finished product, there's 20,000, you know, right. If it's less, you know, so it's, you know, the more you look into it and the less, I guess, proportion of that ingredient going into the finished product, the more finished products are going to be out there for consumers.
Okay.
So it's that's a big impact. Mm-hmm. So, you know, you look at these things and say, okay, well, why is this still open after 2 days of me being here? You know, keep it closed. Simple things like that. But it's that realization, you know, I guess I go back to, it's more of an internal thing than an external thing, really.
Yeah.
Keeping doors closed is fine, and sure, it's like one of the main lines of defense, but it's not the outside that you've got to worry about as much, right?
Yeah.
Okay. Ranjit, what else do we do for our clients?
So what we like for the clients, we wanted to make sure that if we are given responsibility to help them out for their food safety programs and food defense is a part of it, we want to make sure that whatever program they have written or implemented is working for them or not. So coming from outside as a visiting at technical advisors from TAG, I definitely wanted to challenge them by maybe I'm walking by from the back door where the drivers enter and I can walk all the way to half of the plant and nobody stopped me. Mm-hmm. So then I will say, whoa, Like, it means anybody can walk in and put anything and go anywhere and you will not know. So being a tag, people having exposure to several of the different global companies and small, medium to large companies, I do feel that we bring a different chain of thought and mindset for people to identify the risk like on their written program. So food defense program is there, yes, great. It's signed off, it's verified, it's good, it's documented, but is it really well enough to protect you from the risk? So that's what we do. And there are lots of stories which we can share some other time. Yeah. It's never ending, but it's always, every story has a learning behind it. And every story has a lesson for the producers to make sure that take it seriously. It's fun to talk about how far I go from the back door to the middle of the warehouse, but that's not what we want our plants to be like that, right? So that's where there's a huge responsibility from all sides to make sure their food defense program is good.
Okay. Well, thank you both very much. Before we end here though, I want to ask each of you one last question, just kind of a two sentence answer here. What do you see as the most important aspect we've discussed? What should the viewer take away from all this? Sam.
Well, I maybe not even two sentences, one word, diligence.
Okay.
Maintain vigilance and stay diligent. Yeah.
Okay. Renji?
Site-specific program and training awareness.
Great.
Or you can get a big dog like I have in the background that makes the bark in the middle of my conversation.
Here now and again in the background a little bit. So thank you again, and thank you, viewers. And we hope that this session of Tag Talks has given you some further insight into food defense in Canada. And know that you can call on Sam or Ranjit or any of our Tag Canada team for further questions or assistance. And be sure to check out our other Tag Talks videos, particularly Food Safety Director Chris Snabe's videos, which delve deeper into both food defense and economically motivated adulteration at the links you see on the screen. And subscribe to stay up to date on all things food safety and public health from TAG and TAG Canada experts. Thank you.